been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hey, bro. I've been there. Hey, bro.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to another episode of Hashtag MoLedge Podcast. This is Rachel Herndon Dunn. I'm sitting here with lovely co-host Becky Lohman. I will be taking over for Scott Vaughn for a while, apparently. We are sitting here with Representative Justin Alferman, who's the Vice Chair of the Budget Committee. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you for having me.
So the budget's done in the House, right?
Budget Committee is done. We will be having that on the full floor next week. We'll probably be, I think, perfecting it on Tuesday and then third reading it on Thursday.
That's a pretty fast schedule for a multi-billion dollar budget.
It is, but that's typical of any budget committee.
The process has been long, right?
The process has been long. Yeah. I mean, we got the governor's recommendations in the early part, first week of February, and so it takes time to analyze all the bills, and that's why pretty much the entire month of March and February, the Budget Committee has been working diligently on it to achieve our priorities in conjunction with the governor's office. And to make sure that our budget, our priorities have been funded. And I am extremely proud of the product that we have coming out of the Budget Committee. All the appropriations chairs and the chairman and every member of that committee has worked extremely hard to get to the point where we're at. And it wasn't easy.
Many early mornings and late nights, I feel like the Budget Committee is always in the Budget Committee, all those members, right?
Yeah,
I'm not in my office all that much. Usually they're down in appropriations staff rooms or the budget chair's
office.
Well,
a few weeks ago, I think the House stayed until 11, and then you guys had committee after that. Everyone was getting ready to go have late dinners or whatnot.
I left the building at 2:30, got home at 3:30.
And then you were back at what time?
Took a two-hour nap, right. And then left at about 6 o'clock.
I love how you didn't actually go to sleep. It has to be like more than 4 hours to consider
right.
Sleep. If it's 2 hours, it's a nap.
It was a nice nap.
There was some talk about Representative Deb Lavender reallocating about $7 million from the AG's office.
You know,
what are some other things that we can expect to see that's been different or changed from previous year's budgets?
I would say that just the and this isn't a negative comment to any other process for the Budget Committee, but I will say that the level of cooperation and the inclusiveness of the appropriations committees into the workings of the budget made it run way smoother than I've ever seen it. And I've been on staff, either staff or elected, since 08, and this was the smoothest I've ever seen it. And I think that's partly because of the way that the Budget Committee is now comprised. So you have every member of budget is also a member of an appropriations committee, whereas in the past, there would be a lot of work done by the appropriations committees, and then they turn that over to the full budget, and the full budget says, well, that's great, nice work, and then see you later. And so now every single member of budget has had their specific area in the appropriations committee, so it's a lot easier to incorporate that into the full budget than in years past, where you may have just been a member of an appropriations committee. So I think that has led to a higher level of cooperation. So in terms of Representative Lavender, I mean, she did her homework, and she did a tremendous amount of work to find some of these unexpended funds. There's probably some problems with where she took it from, and because we just didn't have the answers there that evening, and it that's unfortunate. I think we will attempt to reverse that decision.
There's a lot of opportunities to make changes.
That's a great point. There's a lot of opportunities. I mean, we're going to the full floor next week, and there's a lot of opportunities to look at some of the things that we've done, and take a step back and say, did we make any errors? And we're all human. All 35 members.
Well, that's why there's this legislative process, right?
Correct.
That's how it's supposed to work. Very rarely does a bill come out perfect, and everyone's like, "No, you did. You got it. Everything's great." So, I mean, that's kind of how it's supposed to work.
Right. And there are no perfect bills.
Yeah, there are no perfect bills.
Another headline from this budget so far has been that the foundation formula is fully funded.
Fully funded. And that is one of the most remarkable things.
For the first time.
For the first
ever.
Time.
First time
well,
ever.
So some will argue to say that, you know, well, there was a couple of years that we funded it during the phase-in process, but this is the first time since the statute has read, yes, fully fund the foundation formula, that we've actually hit it. Not only that, but also restoring the withholds and the transportation cuts to K-12 education, those combined are huge in this budget. And I don't think enough can be said of the work and the dedication put in by our chairman. Scott Fitzpatrick, Representative Scott Fitzpatrick, from day one said, you know, I want to take a run at this. I want to get this done. And the fact that he's actually been able to do it with the work with Lyle Rowland and the Education Committee to actually get this done, it's nothing short of remarkable. That's a huge win all day long, and that's going to be something that I am adamant when we go to conference with the Senate that we hold is transportation funding, but more importantly, foundation formula to make sure that's fully funded. We've proven that it can get done.
Now, you and Representative Fitzpatrick are probably the youngest team.
Your combined ages of the chairman and the vice chairman.
I have to believe that's correct. I'm 31 and Scott is yet to turn 30. So
Scott's 28. He's younger than me. He's younger than I am.
Scott's 29.
Which I like to think of myself as a young person, but Scott's younger than me.
I think he turns 30 this year. But if you look at Scott, he's already been here for this will be his fifth year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's already a seasoned veteran at and not yet 30. So yeah, that's a bit strange.
And wicked smart, right? Age doesn't change.
That is correct.
Right.
Well, I think that's something that showed up in the Budget Committee hearings is when we watched how the leadership was handling everything, it's very clear that they knew exactly what they were going for. But more so, we saw a lot of instances where our leadership was literally guiding the freshmen through the process, explaining each step to them. We even had instances where we had our leadership telling them which motion they needed to be make to move forward with their amendments.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's an interesting thing to see.
The level of inclusion has been just remarkable this year. This is my third year on budget. And
are you talking about across party lines?
Lines, and the chair has shown so much cooperation with every member. And I don't feel like anyone on the committee was surprised, nor do I feel like they were not given enough information whenever we were going through the process. And I can't say enough how proud I am of that product.
They say not to ask questions that you don't know the answer to, but with the obvious amount of cooperation that's been going on in the legislature this year, does that have anything to do with the supermajority and needing to kind of unify such a large supermajority?
I don't. Perhaps. I mean, our numbers in the House are relatively the same. I think we picked up one seat. I'm gonna credit that to leadership, and the different players that are at hand here, and just their willingness to want to be inclusive on everyone. And you know, we included some. I'm glad you brought up the fact that, you know, it is such a large supermajority. It would be easy for the chair just to say, nope, we're not doing any Democratic amendments. That's not the way I want to operate, and that's not the way that Scott wants to operate. So there was a lot of amendments that were incorporated from the minority party. Look, if the way that Representative Fitzpatrick looks at it is if it's a good idea, then we're going to do it. Okay, if it's a disagreement on something, yeah, do it respectfully, but we're not going to go along with that idea. But if it's a good idea, we shouldn't be rejecting it just because it's a minority member's idea. And that's how we, and I also think that budget also transcends partisan lines oftentimes as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a sophomore, so you've got two more terms.
If the good people of the 61st if the good people of the 61st decide to send me back, yeah, I have an additional 5 years after this one.
So what do you think in the future the House and maybe Senate could continue to do to build on the teamwork we're seeing?
Well, the teamwork in the House has been good, and both chambers has been good, but we are still, I'd say we're a good 25% done with the budget. As soon as we send it out of the House, them are 50%. So I'll reserve comment on that until we, you know, because not that I'm anticipating any type of conflict, but I think there are even a little bit of differences that are arising between the House and the Senate, and that's you know, look, that's what's going to happen with two equal houses of the legislative branch. No matter what kind of cooperation we have, we're going to have disagreements. And that's normal in the process, you know. They represent individual, you know, I represent 35,000 individuals just like every other member of the House. And every member of the Senate represents, what, 178,000 individuals. And, you know, I respect that. But, you know, just know that, you know, we're not going to get steamrolled just like they don't expect to get steamrolled by the House. So that's normal, and that our system of government is set up to have that type of conflict. So I'm confident we'll be able to work through those.
That's nice. And also,
How lovely
representative.
I'm trying to be diplomatic there.
Speaking of lovely people, we have a couple of great sponsors I'd like to go ahead and thank while Becky's thinking of her next question. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Republic Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Now, Becky, you see a different side of the legislative process, kind of. What have you observed? What are you thinking?
As far as budget goes and otherwise, I think, you know, to Representative Offerman's point, I think it's been pretty refreshing when the Republicans do have a supermajority. It seems like this year there's been less infighting. It seems like everyone's doing their best to ensure that everyone's voices can be heard and, you know, to the point where we have to, you know, move along with the day. And I know there's frustrations from some parties, but that's what you're going to get in the legislature. But I don't think you should shy away from those kind of conflicts. That's what challenges our bias, and, you know, what's good for my district might not be good for your district. And so us disagreeing on that, I think, is a good thing. That brings to light and helps with the understanding, and conflict is a good thing. I've personally never shied away from conflict. I actually welcome it. My husband is somewhere laughing hysterically at that comment.
I keep thinking about how much fun it is to budget with just my husband, let alone budgeting with 34.
Well, if you and your husband had a $28 billion budget, it'd probably be.
Oh, we'd have so much fun. TJ Maxx, here I come.
What?
27.
Right. Let's be crystal clear. What? Are there any line items in particular that you're specifically proud of? I know we talked about the foundation formula, but anything that, you know, nobody's heard about yet that you're personally excited about, or you know that some members on committee were excited about?
You know, I am, this year it's not what, and I always say budget's not for, you know, hey, what can I do for you? What can I do for this other person that, you know, I'm particularly proud of? I'm particularly proud of the fact that we got the point allocation for levels of acuity and Medicaid spending back down to 21 for those individuals who desperately, desperately need it. I think that, you know, setting up the Senior Protection Fund in that line and making sure that we can get back down to 21 points is not only necessary, but it's imperative. And the fact that we got down from there when the governor wanted to do 27, and the fact that we got back down to 21, again, that's a huge win, and to make sure that those people can have level of care. And also making sure that the budget is we're still spending less money than the governor's proposal by shifting around funds and making sure that we fund our priorities. I mean, that is what a budget is. It is about spending for your priorities. And I think we laid out a good set of priorities in this budget. So I would say that the 21 points and full funding of the foundation formula and transportation in that are the things that I am most proud of in this year's budget.
Speaking of the governor, Governor Greitens proposed the largest budget in Missouri's history, right?
I believe that's correct.
And that raised some eyebrows. Was there anything in his budget that kind of stuck out to you as showing what his priorities were and what he was bringing to the table?
I mean, it's a bit disingenuous. And I don't mean that as an insult to you, but when people bring that up, that is a bit disingenuous, because every budget that the Missouri legislature has is always the biggest budget, because it's just the natural progression of how things cost
in the state. That's a fair point.
And it's your natural cost of continue for a lot of these programs. Look, we spend around $10 billion that is general revenue. The rest of that is all federal and other funds. Those funds, you know, those are programs that, a lot of those are programs that we are mandated by the federal government to spend on. So, you know, just I wouldn't be too alarmed by the actual number, but you have to look at the growth of certain programs and what we as Missourians and our hard-paying tax dollars of general revenue, look at what those programs that are growing, if you're going to be alarmed at something. But you're right, it is rather large, and you know, a lot of that is expansive programs such as Medicaid. I mean, the Medicaid budget is by far the largest budget that we have in the budget, and it continues to grow at a record pace. I think we've done a good job of cutting out the programs that we say, hey, we're not going to fund this. This doesn't work. With our federal and state tax dollars are best spent in other ways, and I think that's reflected in the 13 budget bills that we passed.
Now, with previous governors, there's been a lot of complaints from legislators that the governor hasn't come upstairs or downstairs to work with the legislature.
I've been one of those people.
And I noticed just from social media, you've posted that you've seen the governor, period.
I see the governor at least once a week walking through the halls, at a minimum. In fact, last night I had about a, 15-20 minute conversation with the governor in relation to ethics reform, which I found, I desperately tried to get a meeting with Governor Nixon, and I couldn't even, not only could I not even meet with Governor Nixon, I couldn't even meet with his staff until I threatened to take their funding out of the budget. So, completely, which now that individual,
speaking of nice things.
Yeah, well, now that individual is a registered lobbyist, which I find ironic. But that's for another topic.
That's a podcast after dark. Right?
That's an after dark podcast. There's irony there. But yeah, I mean, it is not hard to get a meeting with the governor. I think that, to the best of my knowledge, that transcends party lines as well. If you want to meet with the governor, you can meet with this governor. That level of approachability is something I don't think we've seen since probably Kit Bond. I mean, I've heard stories from some of the reps who were down here previously in the 80s and said that, you know, Governor Bond would walk the halls at night, go into every office just to say hey, because he wanted to have a good relationship with the General Assembly. And I think Governor Greitens is on his way to doing that as well, because, I mean, I haven't yet to hear anyone have a negative meeting with him on the House side. Now, that may be different on the Senate side, but I've had nothing but pleasant meetings.
But at least it's a
him.
Meeting, like we said, conflict is good, right? Let's talk about what we disagree about.
Just being able to have that conversation,
right.
and to meet with him on a person-to-person, not a, hey, I'm the governor, and this is what I want you to do. Just say, hey, how are we going to move forward on this issue? And it was, I got to be honest, it was very refreshing and inspiring. It gave me a lot of. It made me feel good that we actually have a path going forward. But
well, and it's hard to get your priorities across the finish line when the first time I ask you for something is also the first time we're ever meeting, right?
Right.
I think that's very diplomatic and smart long term. If I'm showing up and I'm the governor and I'm like, hey, Justin, I need $10 million from you, and we've never met before. That's
right.
You know, that's difficult. It's difficult. Relationships matter, and especially when you feel like you're working together with a governor, I think that is a great long term strategy. Not a strategy. It's a great long-term, you know, way to be.
Absolutely.
Do you think his approachability and availability transcends party? Like, do you think it's because he's an outsider and who's never held elective office before?
Perhaps. You know, I try to be as inclusive as possible whenever I approach an issue. It could be the outsider. It could be the having never served before. It probably just speaks to his character that I like, hey, this is how I'm going to approach things. He doesn't have to do that. I mean, he won the election.
Right.
He can
do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants. So, but the fact that he's going out of his way and meeting with House members, and especially House members, because there's 162 right now, but 163 of us. It's difficult to get around to each and every one of us. And I've heard some reps and senators have had multiple meetings with him. I mean, it's not difficult to get a meeting with the governor, which I think is great. That's something that's unparalleled that I have never seen before.
Well, there's 9 minutes left of this podcast, which means it's time for 5 questions that will distract all of us. So Becky has written.
It's 2:50 on a Thursday, so we're going to 5 questions.
2:50 on a Thursday.
5 questions for Representative Alferman. So question 1. What did you... So earlier, before we got on the air, you had said that you moonlighted as a radio host, right? So we know that that's in your past. What, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? A legislator, right? A member of the Missouri House of Representatives.
This was the last job I thought I was ever going to have. You know, in grade school, I always thought I was either going to be... This is going to sound weird. I either wanted to be a priest or I wanted to be a lawyer.
Well, one of those things makes sense with what you do now.
Yeah, you're talking about the priest, right?
No, I'm talking about the priest, yeah. You want to help people.
So, yeah, I'm clearly not a Catholic priest.
Hey, you're young. What did we say? You're 30?
That could still
be at the end of your...
But yeah, you know, this actually, it was radio that got me into this because I applied to go to journalism school at University of Missouri and got a job at the Zuma Radio Group before I transferred to Mizzou, and I couldn't stay objective anymore. It was around the 2008 election, so I was like, you know, I'm gonna change political science, and you know, what are you gonna do with that degree? Is what I was asked, and I'm like, I don't know, I'll figure it out later. And then was a staffer in the building from 2008 to now, or until 2014. Mm-hmm. So, never thought I'd be doing this. Ever.
A Catholic priest. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, question two. This is the most controversial question I ever asked.
Absolutely.
Who is your favorite member of the General Assembly?
So many ways you could answer this.
Everyone gets really nervous.
We have to psychoanalyze it.
Who did I? Oh, Robert Ross straight up refused to, like, wouldn't answer the question. You're not picking the person you don't like. You're picking the person you like the most.
But then you're playing favorites.
I don't know.
She's representing Bingler's dog.
There is only one representative I can say who is my favorite. This is pretty easy. That would be Representative Searpoy. As my former boss and now majority floor leader, if I said anyone else, that would be unacceptable. No, I say Mike for a number of reasons. Number one, he took a chance on me whenever I came back to the Capitol in 2012. Took a chance on me, and I really enjoy working in that office and still have a close friendship to him to this day. So I'd have to say it's Representative Searpoy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might agree with you on that, Mike. Representative Searpoy is very well-liked in the legislature.
I actually have a really terrible story.
Representative Searpoy.
About the majority floor leader, and it actually doesn't even involve him. I am from his district, and so all over my parents' house, my mom has written to do things she needs to do, as well as Bible verses. So every time I go home, she's like, on my bedroom, which is now not my bedroom for some reason, there's just Bible verses with Searpoy for state rep at the top. Not kidding. On her bathroom mirror, Searpoy for state rep,
I'm
all over
sure
the house.
I'm not sure how to respond to that.
I don't know. I can't get away from the Capitol even when I'm...
Does he know? Does Representative Searpoy know that?
I tell him like every time I see him.
Okay, good. Because I was like, if he hears that for the first time ever on the podcast, I think we should circle back before this goes live. Okay, question three. What is your most loathed household chore?
House?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Do you guys do chores?
It's just the home where you live.
Can we pack it up and do it to the house?
We can do your most loathed house.
Talk about
we can do both. Yeah, no kidding.
Boy,
at home with your family, what's the chore that you just procrastinated on or you try to pass on?
And your wife just
on?
Does it for you.
Procrastination? laundry. I do. I mean, my wife is, whenever I'm down here, my wife, God love her, is a single mom of two young children, and so I don't expect her to do any of my laundry, so that's why I'm loathed, because that it piles up until Friday, and then I come home and say, okay, I guess I gotta do it. Laundry's probably it during session.
What's your most loathed house chore? If you went there.
It's also laundry.
Probably emergency clauses. Having to go through the process of emergency clauses every single time for some things that sometimes are and are not emergencies.
Air quotes around emergencies. Yeah,
we shouldn't debate it at all. If it either is or it isn't. I mean, just get
I
on
I think
with
you're
it.
Not alone with on that. I think a lot of your
I miss Representative. Although I do miss Representative Lefebvre's eloquent debate on emergency clauses.
Yeah. Okay, you're a young legislator. What is the emoji that you use the most?
I don't think I use emojis.
I would also think legislators might use more emojis.
Really?
Because they just can't stop. They're so excited.
You don't use emojis? I don't use emojis because I'm a human being and I use words.
What he said.
We're getting like real salty on this podcast.
I'm sorry, goodness. But as elected officials should not. You can use, that's fine, but as an elected official,
we are trying to walk this one back.
We as elected officials, I mean, we are tasked with being able to communicate, and if we have to use symbols and shapes and colors to do so, I kind of scoff at that. I mean, just use some words. And now, you know, people are going to listen to this, and they're going to go back to all my Twitter feed and Facebook.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I'm going to go harass you on Twitter immediately after. He's looking at his phone right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm sitting there looking
at it. I don't even have emoji installed.
Well, yeah. To be fair, we could go back to that point where we can just say, as a man, you have at some point used grunts to communicate.
Yeah, like, probably.
That has happened.
Probably.
Or size.
Eye rolls for me.
Yeah,
it's an emoji.
It's an emoji.
That Becky uses.
I've used it once and I use it sarcastically.
Yes.
Sure.
It elevates communication.
The intelligence level of this room is high, and we're making our listeners question our IQ level.
As someone who holds a communications degree, I think it would be inappropriate for me to use
it. I was in the J school, and I have no shame in my emoji game.
Wait, do we have three people in this room with communications degrees from Mizzou right now?
No. Oh, hold on.
I have an associate's
degree in communications from East Central College, because I'm a community college guy, and then I have a political science degree from Mizzou.
Okay. Very nice. Nice.
Still Mizzou guy.
Okay, last question, most important one. Who won the week?
Who won the week? I think Representative Fitzpatrick wins the week with getting out a budget which almost, and on every vote, almost unanimously. I mean, I think we totaled it up for all 13 budget bills, and he got like maybe 8 or 9 no votes on all of them.
Wow.
That's something that traditionally has been the case, but as Chris Kelly would probably tell you, but as of recent years, that has not been the case. And I think that speaks to the level of cooperation with all members. So, yeah, I'd say definitely Representative Fitzpatrick wins the week.
And his fantasy sports bill was perfected in the House.
That's true.
Not that I was paying attention
to
anything.
Plug it all.
Full disclosure, I represent the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. But I agree. Representative Wolferman said that it was Representative Fitzpatrick, so I was just adding some facts to the conversation.
I think he definitely wins the week. And if I had to give a minority member props for winning the week, it would have to be Representative Lavender. You know, she takes the cake from Representative Lefebvre last year with Diaper Bank. I think this is the first time I've ever seen a minority member shift around $6 million. But, you know, she did her homework.
I'll say it again. Budget ninja.
She's a budget ninja?
Budget ninja.
That's what he says. I don't see that about many Democrats.
I think that's the move, the title that you give it every year. Whoever has that one move.
I'll keep editing.
You guys can create a plaque. Give it out. Every year. Budget ninja.
Speaking of paying for it, thank you so much for Republic Services and St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring this podcast. And we hope to hear from you next week on the hashtag MoLedge podcast.